Hall Weekly is on the air.
Hi, I'm Hal Barkish, and along with Eric Edholm, it is our pleasure to welcome you to this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly, where every week, in season and out, we bring you all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the National Football League before they've even happened.
We'll get an exclusive report from the recent owners' meetings in Indianapolis, and we continue our series of lockout reports on all 32 teams.
It's all just ahead on Pro Football Weekly.
Pro Football Weekly is on the air!
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining us again this week for Pro Football Weekly, all the news, scoops, and rumors from around the National Football League, 52 weeks a year, the very best in NFL coverage. I'm Hub Arkish, the publisher and editor at PFW, along with my co-host, our senior editor, Eric Edholm. And we are joined off the top by associate editor Dan Parr, who was on assignment in Indianapolis this week at the NFL owners' meetings. And so we've got all the latest both in the labor impasse and other things that went on at those meetings. But first, on the labor impasse, guys, no news is no news. Nothing's really happened in the last week. People are targeting the June 3rd hearing of the owner's appeal of Judge Susan Nelson's ruling, granting the players an injunction against the lockout. The stay, of course, was made permanent last week, so the lockout remains in place until June 3rd, and then some ruling coming after that. Also, we're awaiting a ruling from Judge David Doty. Of course, he in the 8th District up in Minneapolis, who has ruled in favor of the players that the owners violated the collective bargaining agreement negotiating TV contracts back in 2008. He is in the damages portion of that ruling. That could come any day. Either of these things could have a tremendous impact on negotiations or the lack thereof, but no news, at least heading into the Memorial Day weekend. Now, one of the NFL's biggest stars, though, who had not been heard from prior to this week, at least for a while, decided it was time for him to come out in an interview with ESPN's Sal Palantonio. Ray Lewis had some very interesting comments. First, his thoughts on where they're at in this labor impasse.
We really got to remove pride. Seriously. There's no other reason the issue is going on. That's why I don't get into word and a lot of all that other stuff, because it takes away from life. Mm-hmm. What we're going through right now, we're affecting way more than us. It's too many people live through us. People live through us.
Now, if you take some of the Shakespeare and some of the soap opera out of old Ray, he's right. I mean, it's about pride. You know, Eric, the legal issues, even us layman attorneys have figured a lot of it out. The bottom line is neither side is totally right, neither side is totally wrong, and it seems pretty clear that this is about egos and pride right now.
Yeah, I think there's a situation where both sides may have felt they've come too far in their strategy, and let's face it, there is strategy in everything the two sides have done. Everything the union has done at this point has been calculated and careful and drawn up and thought out six moves in advance. Same with the NFL. And I feel like, you know, both sides believe they should win and can win. And so at this point, they've let too much go by, I think, to feel like they can just sort of get back to the negotiating table without claiming some sort of victory in this thing.
Dan, I know you spoke to a number of the owners earlier this week. You also attended the Roger Goodell press conference that got played pretty far and wide. Anybody reference Lewis's comments to Goodell or any of the owners down there? Any blowback or feedback on any of that?
It did not come up in the press conference with Goodell. We did not hear him address Ray Lewis's comments, but the wider picture he certainly did comment on quite a bit, and that was the focus of his comments. He painted a pretty bleak picture of the effects this has already had, and he obviously was reaching out to the fans when he tried to explain and make clear that he was aware that they are unhappy with the situation right now, and that the NFL is feeling that and is well aware of that, and that traffic on their website at NFL.com is down, the ratings for the draft were down, season ticket sales are down. You know, these are the effects now here as we sit in late May, so it'll be interesting to see just how bad the situation gets as we get closer to the season.
You know, Dan, I'm really curious, though. Did any of the writers push Goodell at that point and say, okay, if you're aware of it, what are you doing about it? Because all they do is they keep talking about it, and Jeff Pash had some comments. We'll get to that in a moment where they're going to push that, you know, we got to get back to negotiating and get out of court, trying to lay it all at the feet of the players in their lawsuit. But I'm curious, didn't somebody say to Goodell, well, if you're aware of it, why aren't you trying to make it better?
Well, I think he was pushed in a way because the NFL keeps saying that they need a collective bargaining agreement. There has to be a collective bargaining agreement. When the league has operated without a collective bargaining agreement in the past and could do so again, the NFL does not have seem to have any interest in that being their future. Goodell was pushed a little bit on that, but overall, no, I don't think we heard a lot of pushback. He's been saying, Jeff Pasch has been saying, that talks are frozen right now, and they are pushing to get negotiations going again, but with the court date, June 3rd, coming up, there's not going to be anything that happens before then, and mediation coming up June 7th, I don't think we should be very optimistic that there will be much changes in the situation at that time either, because that court case for the appeal will not be decided at that time.
Well, and Eric, I think the reason that Goodell and the owners are so clearly not interested in operating without a CBA, we've talked about this the last few weeks, is anything they try and do without a CBA is just going to pile up the damages in the players' antitrust suit. And they know it. And so for all the stones they want to keep throwing at the players, they forced them into this. It was the only leverage they had. And now they're asking the courts, which have told them that they're not entitled to exemptions from the antitrust law, to protect them from the antitrust laws by letting them maintain their lockout. In effect, that's all they're doing here.
That's led to this gridlock, I think, and that's why, you know, I think it, look, I agree with what the NFL's saying. I don't necessarily agree with how they're approaching it, but it's true. I think they have to get back to an unmediated court or negotiating sessions out of the courts. I really believe that it does come down to both sides talking. So, Dan, did I know Jeff Pasch mentioned it, but I mean, what was the talk about getting those discussions out of the mediated sessions and into just NFL and players?
Yeah, he said basically that the setting with Judge Boylan in Minnesota, with him overseeing mediation, he basically called that an artificial setting. He said that the talks are frozen right now. While he kept pushing for the two sides to get together and negotiate outside of court, he doesn't seem optimistic that the situation as it stands now with going back to mediation is going to produce many positive results. And he really was trying to change the way that the two sides are looking at this. He said, we need to stop looking at this as there's going to be a winner and a loser. Of course, there is going to be a winner and a loser. That's the whole point of this debate right now. So, again, I don't think there was a whole lot of reality in what he was saying.
All right, guys, I know I should resist the temptation, but I've never been great with self-control. And, of course, Ray Lewis didn't stop with just his comments on the strike. He also had some thoughts about what could happen with the coming NFL season if, in fact, it's not played.
Do this research if we don't have a season. Watch how much evil, which we call a crime, watch how much crime picks up if you take away our game. There's nothing else to do, Sal.
Well, and coming from a convicted felon, a source of real expertise, I guess.
So, I was going to say, is that a threat or a promise? I don't know what.
Yeah, yeah. Like I said, I couldn't resist it. I know he considers himself rehabilitated. Certainly Ravens fans do. They get mad at me every time I point out that the guy's a convicted felon. But in this case, Ray Lewis, I think, was having some fun with Palantonio. And his initial comments are right on. This thing has become about ego. It's become about pride. And right now, the biggest losers are the fans. We're going to take a very quick commercial break here. More with Dan Parr and Eric Edholm and the rest of the Pro Football Weekly editorial staff in just a moment. Bob Arkish, along with Eric Edholm and Dan Parr of our Pro Football Weekly staff. And Dan was in Indianapolis to cover the NFL owners' meetings this week. And, Dan, you took advantage of that opportunity to also visit with the owner of the Carolina Panthers, Jerry Richardson. Of course, the Panthers, one of the teams you cover for PFW. And apparently Mr. Richardson not overly concerned about his first overall choice in the draft, Cam Newton, not being able to work with his coaches so far.
The way Jerry described it is, listen, every team has to operate under the same rules. We can't communicate with our players right now. We can't have Cam Newton in to work with our coaching staff, but Blaine Gabbert can't do that in Jacksonville, and Christian Ponder can't do that in Minnesota. But, of course, it is a little bit of a different situation in Carolina. They have a first-time head coach moving in Ron Rivera. They're implementing new schemes on offense and defense, and all of us believe that Cam Newton's going to have a pretty steep learning curve, and it's going to be difficult for him to step right in and play if this lockout does last and cut into training camp, or, you know, even with a full training camp. It's going to be very difficult for him. But Mr. Richardson, for now, said that he's not overly concerned about it.
And the two men who are helping usher Cam Newton through this dark time, Ken Dorsey and Chris Wenke. I know that those aren't names that evoke memories of Canton, Ohio or anything like that. To be fair, both are very very sharp gentlemen. I've talked to both in the past. But what are those guys doing to help Cam during this lockout?
Well, I know he's got the playbook in Carolina. I'm sure that they're helpful, and guys who have run pro-style offenses before have spent time in the NFL. They do have that acumen, and they're able to help him out with that. But I don't know exactly, other than, you know, those types of things and becoming mentors for him and maybe, you know, guiding him through a what's going to be a difficult transition. I can't say specifically what they have taught him, but we'll see in a short while, hopefully, just how much of a benefit or not this had on Cam Newton. And he's going to be, his agent said, he will be participating in a player-organized workout with the rest of the Panthers and Charlotte next week.
Well, I can say that Ken Dorsey, having worked with Rob Brzezinski at Miami, certainly is probably going to be aware of a lot of the terminology, a lot of the concepts that Cam's going to have to learn down there in Charlotte, the new offensive coordinator of the Panthers. So that certainly couldn't hurt.
Dan, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, another one of your ball clubs. We talked during your lockout report on the Bucs last week about their decision to be made on Aqib Talib. Nothing can be done right now as he deals with his off-the-field legal issues. But you're hearing rumblings that even though the Bucs not usually big players in big money free agency, that there could be another corner out there they could be interested in?
We're hearing that it would make a lot of sense for the Bucs to show some serious interest in Nnamdi Asamoah when free agency does get started, whenever that is. They have Rondae Barber back on a one-year deal. They have this situation with Talib. They have some nice young corners that are developing, but Barber's going to probably be, well, he'll be at least a free agent again after this season, and he maybe could be retiring at that time. Talib, we don't know what his future holds. So while the situation at corner on paper looks okay for the Buccaneers, they potentially could have a hole there eventually. So if you go out and land a Nnamdi Asamoah, you have one of the best players at that position and a great guy on top of everything, which for a team with Ted some, you know, questions about character would not hurt at all. So I think it makes a lot of sense, and they're going to have plenty of room under the salary cap if there is a cap in the next CBA.
Dan, the one club that you cover we did not get a lockout report from you on last week was the Chicago Bears, and I would think the questions there are pretty obvious. What do they do about the worst offensive line, or at least the worst pass protection in the NFL, allowed 56 QB sacks in the regular season last year? Where is Jay Cutler after his rather, I don't know what to call it, unceremonious doesn't quite say it, exit from the playoffs, all the grief he took via Twitter and social media? And what do they do at linebacker, where as good as Lance Briggs and Brian Urlacher may be, they happen to be the only two linebackers under contract with the ball club right now?
Yeah, and that offensive line is clearly the top issue facing this team. It'll be interesting to see how Cutler comes back, but no matter how confident he is, if that offensive line is as shaky as it was at times last year, that offense is going to have trouble. Now, they spent their first-round pick on Gabe Kareemi, but the center, longtime center, Olin Krutz, is going to be a free agent. We know the Bears would like to have him back, and I'm sure he's open to doing that, but he's going to be on the open market when things get started again. And they do have some questions. You know, Jamarcus Webb could be shifting over to left tackle from right tackle to make a clear spot for Kareemi. How does Webb handle that transition? Only going into his second year. And at guard, they have Chris Williams, their first-round pick in 2008, who I don't think anybody really knows what to make of him just yet. No one's sold that he is going to be a staple at left guard for the time to come. And they have Roberto Garza at right guard, who's a solid but aging veteran. So there's some holes there. And linebacker, you really wonder what they're going to do. They only have two under contract. And you would think Nick Roach will probably be back as a strong side guy, but there's just not a lot of depth there. And we've seen, Briggs battled injuries at times last year. Urlacher the year before missed all but the first few snaps of week one. So they need better depth there, no question.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We've got to take a quick commercial break here, but we've got a lot more coming up right here on Pro Football Week. Welcome back to Pro Football Weekly as we continue to look around the NFL. We try and keep talking football, even if, in fact, the league is locked in a labor impasse and the players are locked out. Still a lot to figure out about these ball clubs, and we welcome in executive editor Dan Arkush, who covers the Green Bay Packers, the defending world champions. And, Dan, some interesting little tidbits that I know you've stumbled on, too. We all have a lot of time on our hands these days. Everybody knows the Packers, once this lockout is lifted, have got big free agent decisions to make. James Jones, the wide receiver, their starting left guard, Darren College, Brandon Jackson, backup running back, amongst a number of other players, are going to be free. But it could be that 2012 is even more difficult for Ted Thompson. What is it he's thinking, you're thinking he's looking at in free agency there?
Well, it's going to be a different situation because next year there's going to be some really key people on this team. Not that the guys that you've mentioned, Hub, aren't, but JerMichael Finley and Ryan Grant in particular, two huge offensive weapons, will be in their contract years. And it's going to be real difficult probably for Ted Thompson to keep both those guys. Finley in particular is going to be looking for a sizable pay hike. Another guy, Josh Sitton, who's really developed into a very underrated, excellent guard, is going to be also a free agent. So Ted Thompson's going to have his hands full.
Wouldn't, if you're picking between the two, though, Dan, wouldn't you think there was, there'd be more of an emphasis on re-signing Finley? I mean, you know, look, you know, no offense to Ryan Grant, but you know, he looked somewhat replaceable in the sense that, that Starks came on late last season. They drafted this kid, Alex Green, in the third round. I mean, of the two, wouldn't you say that, that Grant might be the more likely to go?
Oh, absolutely. You know, and you've got James Starks, you know, waiting in the wings. So I would probably think that, you know, they would make a much bigger play for Finley than Ryan Grant.
Dan, moving on to St. Louis with the Rams, you're hearing that the offense of new offensive coordinator Josh McDaniels compared to the scheme employed by the former offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur, who's now moved on to Cleveland to be the head coach, could be kind of night and day?
Oh, yeah. I think it's definitely going to really open up a lot. You're going to see a lot of multiple sets, a lot of two tight end type stuff that Pat Shurmur hardly ever used. You know, he went with this just really very conservative small ball passing attack. I think that it's going to be a totally different situation. Of course, the one thing that, you know, they're up against is that nobody can be working right now. They want to, you know, implement a pretty, you know, sophisticated system. And the longer they go without being able to do that, the more likely it is that McDaniels is going to have to scale it back. But I think it's going to be a lot different look to it.
Nice little move by McDaniels to bring in, using his brother, Ben McDaniels, unemployed, to help Sam Bradford. But, Dan, I want to talk about another team in the division with the Seahawks. And, you know, everybody seems to want to make these connections with Matt Leinart and Pete Carroll, the USC thing in Seattle, possibly reuniting. You know, Leinart sat on the bench in Houston last year, didn't really get to play at all. But you're hearing that may not be the case. That connection may have dried up, perhaps.
Well, you know, they had an opportunity to get him before and passed on it. And I think that, you know, I mean, it's a natural to attach, you know, Carroll with former USC guys. But if you look at recent history, he let Lendale White go. I mean, that didn't work out. Lawrence Jackson, a former number one pick, those guys played at USC and they're gone. And so you kind of have to wonder about just how much stock, you know, Pete Carroll really puts in these USC connections. I don't see, and most people close to the team don't see Leinart being a fit there at all.
All right, Dan, thank you very much. We're going to squeeze in another quick commercial break here, but we've got a lot more to come right here on Pro Football Weekly. Yes, we are, and we are continuing our way around the National Football League with both the way we hear it and our lockout reports on all 32 NFL teams. I'm Hub Arkush, along with Eric Edholm, and we now welcome in Associate Editor Eli Cabron. And Eli, your beat the AFC West, and interesting story out of Oakland. Stefan Wisniewski, their second-round draft choice, their first pick in the draft, actually, expects to be quite the NFL player. I think most scouts agree. He hopes he can be a starter as a rookie, a little bit held back by the fact that rookies are not allowed to work out with coaches or any of the front office folks. Some have their playbooks, some don't. But the bottom line here is that this may also be causing a little bit of family turmoil for the young man.
Yeah, his uncle, Steve Wisniewski, is an assistant offensive line coach with the Raiders, a Raider legend, 8-time Pro Bowler. And Stefan told me that he hasn't talked to his uncle since draft day. He doesn't want to bend the rules at all. The rules allow for family interactions. There's Tom Coughlin and Chris Snee with the Giants, but Stefan told me he doesn't want to mess around with any of that, so he hasn't talked to his uncle for a couple weeks now.
We might be getting tough on the NFL and the players, but I don't want to get in between those two anytime soon. But as far as, you know, you mentioned Snee and the Giants, and he and Coughlin have been able to work it out. You know, Snee is obviously his son-in-law. Is there any nepotism questions? Are there any concerns about the two family members working together? I mean, how's this gonna play out when they do get on the field?
Well, Stefan is in Pennsylvania now, working still on the Penn State campus, and his uncle, I think, is in Oakland, so they're kind of on opposite coasts. But Stefan told me that on draft day, his uncle and Hugh Jackson told him that he'd be the starting center, and he's preparing like that's the case. So it doesn't look like the two will be in the same room anytime soon, unless there's a family reunion or something, and then in which case that'll be kind of awkward if they do discuss the Raiders.
All right, Eli, let's get your lockout report on the Kansas City Chiefs, and I think the place you got to start with this ball club is that the offense, better, not great last year, may have enough playmakers to be moving in that direction, and yet I suppose the biggest question about this football team has to be the departure of offensive coordinator Charlie Weiss, and given the job to Bill Muir, who some people believe could be more of a clipboard holder for Todd Haley than maybe Charlie Weiss was.
Yeah, I think Todd Haley's going to be the one calling the offensive plays, and new quarterbacks coach Jim Zorn will also have an input in that. Joe Flacco was sad to see him leave out of Baltimore, but that should be the benefit of Matt Cassel. But this team is still going to be based around the running game, which was number one in the league last year. So the change in offensive coordinator will be a bit of an adjustment, but not a total revamping of their offensive scheme.
Yeah, and clearly with Cassel, I mean, they're trying to help him out with Jonathan Baldwin as well. I mean, concerns about he and Dwayne Bowe, I mean, two character guys at wide receiver. I mean, can they mesh? Can he jump on the field and be an impact player right away?
Yeah, he and Bowe are very similar type players and very similar type personalities, but Todd Haley and Scott Pioli are banking that having two playmakers will be the benefit of Cassel. And they also might be looking a little bit into the future. Bowe's contract does not extend for very long, so maybe Baldwin's going to come in and replace him. But for this season, they look for the rookie to come right in and start, because their next best wideout is Chris Chambers, and that's a huge drop-off.
Eli, thank you very much. We want to bring in Associate Editor Arthur Arkish now. And, Arthur, we got your lockout reports last week, but some new news on the Indianapolis Colts. It's pretty significant news, even though the surgery is very minor, but apparently Peyton Manning this past week had neck surgery for the second time in the last 15 months.
Well, in March of 2010, Peyton had a procedure done to correct a pinched nerve that had been bothering him for about 4 years. We learned earlier this week that Peyton was in again, having a bulging disc repaired. So we actually had an opportunity, Dr. Shariz Qureshi, who is a co-chief of surgery and a sports medicine expert at Mount Sinai Medicine, reached out to Pro Football Weekly. I had a chance to talk to him yesterday. He shed a little light on the procedure. He said that they are actually very similar. Really the real difference was that this was performed at a different level, but the recovery timetable should also be similar. It's going to be 4 to 5 weeks before he can begin his lifting, before he can begin physical therapy. Now the good news is that there was no fusion involved in the procedure. Now that can be problematic for athletes because it affects their range of motion. In this case, that's not going to be an issue, so Peyton should make a full recovery. One interesting thing that Dr. Qureshi did let us know is that he said that once something like this occurs, once a player or any person for that matter starts having neck issues, disc issues, I should say, with the neck, you can't really change that history. It's something that is probably going to reoccur in the future. Now, he said that more than 5 years down the road, there's probably a 15% chance of this occurring again. So the good news for the Colts is that they're looking to lock up Peyton for one more contract that's going to be somewhere between 4 and 6 years. So they're hopeful that this is not something that's going to, you know, rear its head again during his career.
All right, Arthur, thank you very much. Eric, I want to wrap up one other story very quickly. A lot of people have had the New York Giants focused on a middle linebacker when free agency rolls around. There's a pretty good one in Barrett Rood who could be available. And yet you're now hearing that maybe that's not as likely as some people think.
Well, I think if the Giants go for a linebacker, they've got to make sure that he's a three-down guy. I mean, they that 4-2-5 defense where they had three safeties on the field became their most important package. I don't see that changing, at least not initially. Look, Barrett Rood is probably going to command a pretty good salary, and I just don't see the Giants spending big at that position unless they feel like he is a three-down impact, almost Pro Bowl type guy.
All right, we're going to take one more quick break, and then we're going to start rolling through some more lockout reports. Got at least 7-8 clubs to handle for you right here on Pro Football Weekly. Alrighty, folks, we call this the variety part of the show because we're going to talk about Ocho Cinco now. Can't go a week without talking about him. At least somebody's keeping us entertained during the offseason. We welcome in senior editor Mike Wilkening, who has, amongst other clubs, the Cincinnati Bengals on his beat. And, Mike, is it Ocho Cinco the soccer player or Ocho Cinco the bull rider, or is it Ocho Cinco the snake wrangler? What do you think?
Well, he has made a comment on Twitter, and again with Chad Ochocinco, you never quite know if he's serious or having a joke on us, about getting into snake wrangling. And the idea was that Mike Brown had kind of made the reference to snake wrangling, kind of with reference to the fact that the idea is the Bengals are, you know, at the end of the day, to paraphrase Mike Brown, paying Chad Ochocinco to play football. And in this offseason, he has taken up soccer. He did some bull riding, which I saw in person. They lasted about 1.5 seconds, and he made this reference to snake wrangling. And, you know, obviously Chad Ochocinco took to Twitter, which is, you know, kind of the next stage always for him, and kind of wrote a little bit about it. So I think the big question with regards to Chad Ochocinco, the most compelling storyline with him is, can he pull off enhancing his personal brand and get paid something around that $6 million that the Bengals are slated to pay him this year? Because as we know, guys, he's in the last year of his contract, and there's been speculation that, you know, he might be replaced by AJ Green. Now, the Bengals are loyal to their players. They're not prone to cutting guys too quickly. But Green's presence and Mike Brown's comments, you have to wonder kind of, you know, where the end is for Chad Ochocinco here is in Cincinnati. And, you know, you also have to wonder, the personal brand is important to him, clearly. He's a guy with a big following on Twitter. But when I was at that bull riding event, guys, they didn't bill him as a guy with more than a million Twitter followers. They billed him as a multi-time Pro Bowler. He's a football player first and foremost, I think, in the eyes of the public. There's a lot of value there, and you have to wonder, is he hurting that value?
Well, I will tell you this. You don't have to wonder who's going to win when it comes to Mike Brown and Chad Ochocinco exchanging pithy comments. It's kind of like the Panthers playing the Packers and spotting them 2 touchdowns. So Mike Brown spoke and probably shouldn't have, because now Ocho is off and running again. Now, Eric, the Washington Redskins, Clinton Portis is kind of an Ochocinco wannabe. He's not in Ocho's league, but he's had his moments. He apparently is a former Washington Redskin and now is suggesting that his main goal is to end up somewhere else in the NFC East to come back and haunt the Redskins.
He's picked out his new employer, the New York Giants. The question is whether the Giants will pick him. I don't see it happening right now. I think the Giants probably do have a reserve list of running backs they'd like to look into if Ahmad Bradshaw is a free agent and he leaves, something like that. I don't think Clinton Portis is going to be real high on that list. Look, he can pass block well. I'm sure, you know, he's still tough between the tackles. If you're third and one, I think you can give it to him and get 2 yards, that sort of thing. As far as being a dynamic back and signing on for 2 years and getting the chance to beat his old team, I'm not sure it's going to happen. I mean, Clinton Portis is 29, but he's an old 29, and I think people around the league have seen that.
All right, and what about the quarter? I mean, we don't know more, but the quarterback situation just never goes away with this team. You know, you look at a lockout report, they've got a million questions, but it's got to start and end with quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, this team had some informal workouts, very highly attended, too. I mean, over 40 players both days. And, you know, the big focus by the people we talked to was obviously on John Beck and Rex Grossman. Grossman's a free agent. Beck has sort of been the choice du jour, I think, to replace Donovan McNabb. And, you know, look, Beck doesn't have a rocket arm. Everyone said those guys have looked pretty good on 7-on-7 drills, and Rex has had that reputation since Chicago. He looked great when there was no pass rush, but I think both guys have to prove that, you know, how are they going to handle the blitz and how are they going to handle an 11-on-11? So I think that's the biggest test for them, and I'm not sure either one's going to be up to it.
Mike, got about a minute and a half to get in your Ravens lockout report, and I think it probably starts with Joe Flacco. Who is the real Joe Flacco? Is he a Pro Bowl quarterback? Is he a playoff-winning quarterback? Is he a guy who puts up big numbers but doesn't win big games?
Yeah, that becomes the question, I think, going forward. Long term, the legacy of Joe Flacco will be decided in these years to come. But I would say that as it stands right now, he, you know, has, you know, constructed a good start to his career. But again, this is an offense, I think, with which more is expected. It sputtered in the running game last year. The passing game had its moments, but kind of came up short in some big moments last year, particularly that playoff loss to Pittsburgh. The other issue to consider here, guys, is this is a defense that gave up the most yards it had given up per game since 2002. It's also getting a little bit older on that side of the ball. So the window for the Baltimore Ravens is open. They're an AFC contender. But the big question is, how much longer does that window, you know, stay open? And I think that is tied to the play of Joe Flacco, ultimately.
Well, and certainly a puzzle with the Baltimore Ravens, with a lot of talent on that offensive line, known for their running game. That's where they let up last year. Can the offense and Joe Flacco get it turned around? Jim Zorn won't be there to help. Flacco's not happy about that. We'll see how the rest of it plays out. We've got a lot more yet to go. One more quick commercial break and more of our NFL team lockout reports in just a moment. We roll on with Pro Football Weekly, and we're going to get to the Philadelphia Eagles, one of our senior editors, Eric Edholm's ball clubs. And, Eric, there's certainly no question at this point that it's Mike Vick's job to keep and lose. One of the big questions about them during this lockout in the offseason is, what do they do with Kevin Kolb? Can they afford to move Kevin Kolb? And maybe similar to the Ravens, who we just finished the last segment with, what do they do about their offensive line? Because it's not as talented as Baltimore's, and it was a real problem last year. And they got to find healthy bodies at linebacker once again.
Yeah, the first thing, I mean, the whole Vic Kolb situation, we know Vic's the starter. He was given the exclusive franchise tag. They'll work on a long-term deal with him, regardless of what happened with Kolb. They're going to set the bar high. You know, they set it high when the Cardinals were one of the teams that we reported was very much ready to strike and make a deal around the draft. The price obviously has changed now that the draft has passed. So, you know, we'll see what compensation might be and whether they move them. They'd probably bring in a veteran backup quarterback if they did that. You know, the offensive line, like you mentioned, Danny Watkins, the first-round pick, I think he'll be the starting right guard, tough battler, and I think he kind of fits new offensive line coach Howard Mudd's style. I mean, they want to get back to basics a little bit. 49 sacks of Michael Vick was a big issue. It run blocked pretty well, but I worry about some of those other interior guys, and then right tackle Winston Justice. So that's an issue. And then you got to sort out linebacker, like you mentioned. I don't know what they're going to do on defense, especially new coordinator Juan Castillo. Guy has never really coached defense at this level. So, you know, a lot of questions and not all more answered through the draft.
Well, okay, the Pittsburgh Steelers, one of your clubs. We'll get to your full-blown lockout report with them as well as the Bengals and the Browns next week. But some news with the Steelers this week, a couple pieces of news. First, there is Hines Ward, who just a couple weeks ago was detained and handcuffed by L.A. police, and then they said it was all a misunderstanding. Ward had done no wrong. Now he apparently is the new champ of Dancing with the Stars. I believe Emmitt Smith has won that title. I guess Ocho Cinco didn't get it done. Does it have any impact on this ball club at all, or is it just kind of fun for the tabloids?
I think it's fun more than anything else. I think at the end of the day, you know, probably the biggest piece of news from a football perspective that comes out of it is that the news that Hines Ward is going to have thumb surgery upcoming. And, you know, I would think that it's not anything that's going to hold him back, you know, going forward much. But again, this is a receiving core where he's still a key part of it. You know, one of the other key parts there is Emmanuel Sanders, who, if you remember, was injured in the Super Bowl. Talked to him this week. He's had two foot surgeries, since the Super Bowl. One on the injured foot and another, injury on another foot. He should be good to go in about a month though. Assured me nothing real serious there. So, look, it's a receiving core that again, maybe this time off, it isn't the worst thing. They're sort of a little bit on the mend, but you would tend to think by July or August, this would be a group that would be back at full speed.
See, Hines Ward, thumb surgery. Who said Dancing with the Stars wasn't a contact sport?
No. Explains all those drop passes last year.
Leftover football injury, folks. I don't think a dancing injury. Let's get to your Dallas Cowboys, Eric. And, you know, one of the things that fascinates me about this ball club, everybody's all hot to trot with, what's his name? Jason Garrett, the new head coach, Interim head coach last year, 5-3 finish. Is there a quarterback controversy between John Kitten and Tony Romo? I really don't think so. Here's the issue nobody's discussing. That defense was pretty poor all year long, particularly in those three losses under Kitten. It gave up a lot of points, And there's no Wade Phillips anymore. So, you know, I think the idea that somehow there aren't coaching issues with this football team during this lockout are to me, kind of curious.
Yeah, I mean, somewhere on this planet, there's somebody with the last name Ryan who can't coach defense. We'll see if it's Rob. I mean, I think he's had a pretty good pedigree to this point and worked for Bill Belichick and worked for his father at times and, you know, did a pretty good job in Cleveland with probably half the talent they've got in Dallas. I mean, look, there's some ability there. I question what they're doing at safety, whether they have some moves in their back pocket and free agency. The defensive line needs to be sorted out. They might need another five technique. What do you do with Jay Ratliff? Do you take him off the nose eventually? So, you know, Anthony Spencer took a step back. Mike Jenkins took a step back. So even with all that talent, they still got to sort some of this stuff out. And that was their hallmark a couple years ago when they were a really good football team. They were great on defense and I think just good on offense.
Wilkie, before we close, some rule changes coming out of the NFL owners' meetings. I will discuss them at length in a moment in the publisher's pen, but the impact trying to protect players and some people, particularly James Harrison and Lamar Woodley in Pittsburgh, are calling them the Steeler rules.
Right. This is a team that, you know, particularly with James Harrison, the fines he racked up this past year, you know, obviously he was a guy that was not happy about these changes, and you have to kind of keep an eye on how this affects this particular team, which, again, plays a brand of football that is on the physical side, and, you know, rightly or wrongly has been a team that, particularly with Harrison, that has sort of drawn interest from the league office in terms of the way he has played the game. So, again, we shall see how this sort of all washes out, but, again, there's no doubt this is one of the most physical defenses in the league, and one that, you know, conceivably, if things were to break as they did last year, could potentially be affected by a situation sort of covered in this particular rules change.
All right, Mike, thank you very much. Why are they calling these the Steeler rules? Well, we'll talk about that in just a moment in the publisher's pen.
And now with the publisher's pen, the publisher and editor of Pro Football Weekly, Hub Arkish.
Eric, thank you very much. And it is interesting, folks, with the NFL owners' meetings taking place in Indianapolis this past week, it seemed oddly uncomfortable, to be honest, that they were talking about rule changes and focusing on the game when in the fact is at the moment there is no game. But we'll get back to that in a minute. We should talk about these rule changes. And once again, you wonder how much of it is about making the product better and how much of it is negotiating with this labor impasse. They tried to make the game safer. And one thing I will say for Roger Goodell, from the time he took the job as commissioner and he's had the support of the NFL owners, they are trying to make the game safer. I get that. But I'm not sure what they did with what they're calling these rule changes. They did more clearly define what a defenseless player is. They have now made it clear who they're trying to protect and under what circumstances players will be protected. It is focused mainly on unprotected wide receivers and kick returners and quarterbacks, but other players could end up getting protected as well. And they also more clearly define what they meant by a player launching himself to make a hit. They made it clear that hits above the shoulders, whether it's helmet to helmet or with a forearm or a shoulder, are going to be penalized, and all of that is fine. But then they threw out that they will consider, without being specific, the possibility of also penalizing teams for repeated infractions, and that maybe beyond fines they could even lose draft choices and there could be other penalties. Well, what is maybe? You're talking about making rule changes, and then you come out and say, and plus we're considering this other stuff, we'll see if we feel like doing it or not. That was the problem with these rules in the first place, is the players never really understood what they were supposed to do. Now, I think they've clarified some of that, but I think what they've also done is created more gray areas for the officials, which is the last thing that this game needs. So I give the owners credit for trying to protect their players. There's nothing wrong with that. But I think they've stumbled once again in trying to come up with a clearly defined way to do it and a clearly defined message that the players can understand. That's why Pittsburgh Steeler players, who were fined more than others last year, are calling them the Steeler rules. That's going to do it for this week's edition of Pro Football Weekly. Our thanks to Randy Meyer, our outstanding engineer and producer. Our thanks to Syndication Network, our home studios. And most of all, our thanks to all of you. Thanks so much for listening. Come back next week, same time, same station, for more Pro Football Weekly.